I see resilience now as a way to intelligently manage your energy so that you have the resources to rise to the occasion. You have the resources to be able to respond to a vexing email, or you have the resources to be able to deal with an irate client, if you will.
Hello, my name is Emily Jansen, and this is the Leadership is Female podcast. We interview women in the sports and entertainment businesses to teach you the tips and the mindset that will get you to the top faster. Marian Wright Edelman said, "You can't be what you can't see." Let's bring visibility to women who are crushing it in their roles. Join us week after week, season after season, as we reach back to extend a hand to pull you forward. We will lead you forward because leadership is female. Hello and welcome to the Leadership is Female podcast, Teresa Vaza. We are so excited to have you today. I want you to introduce yourself, but before you do, I want to kind of celebrate all of your success for a minute. You're award-winning leadership expert, keynote speaker, writer, and former chief human resource officer at Alliance Partners, which is the world leader in B2B, B2C insurance and assistance, offering global solutions that span international health and life, travel, insurance, automotive assistance, in case you didn't know. And she's on a mission to help executive professionals eradicate burnout, which I think we could all use your advice on this one, and transform their leadership. You're also a wife and a mom to two kids. So we're thrilled to have you. I'm so excited to dig in and talk to you. I know I just, you know, kind of stole your thunder on the intro, but a lot to celebrate so far in your career. But tell us, how did you get there from executive to now working as a leadership expert?
Well, you can steal my thunder anytime, Emily. I loved that introduction, so I'll take it. Thank you for that. And I'll never forget it. It was the pandemic, actually, at the very start, 2019, which I think was a pivotal moment for probably many women in leadership, where I just remember homeschooling my two children. At the time, they were younger. They're 13 and 11, almost 11 now. And I was in HR, so we were at the peak of challenge in figuring out how to get people home safely and how to keep people physically safe. And I remember just feeling the apex of stress and overwhelm that I hadn't felt in a long, long time. But it was something that was building for some time. I'd spent over 20 years in corporate at that time, and was very fortunate to have been promoted a few times over and lead some really great initiatives and lead some great projects and implement different programs across different parts of the world. But I was tiring. I was starting to really start thinking about, what do I want my second curve of life to look like? And coaching was something that, executive coaching was something I'd been doing for a few years already as a side hustle, like so many of us started. And it was really starting to burst at the seams during the pandemic. I had a number of executives wanting to be coached. And I think that really gave me the confidence to create my own business offering. And so I decided in early 2020 to strike out on my own. And it started with like a handful, like six or seven private clients. And then that turned into a group coaching program that turned into some keynote speaking at different organizations. I do a lot of work around the topic of resilience. And so I do a lot of resiliency training in different organizations because it is the future forward skill, I think, that every company is dying for right now. And it just led to a series of really great serendipitous moments and business opportunities that culminated in a very flourishing business, which I absolutely am in love with and I'm very grateful for, because it was my corporate life that really made that possible, because I learned so much as a female in leadership at that level.
Yeah, you mentioned confidence, and I want to dig into that and how practicing those skills in your corporate job gave you the confidence to go out on your own. Let's dig into that a little bit more. Where was your confidence in the beginning? Is it something you grew over time? And sort of how did you develop that as a skill?
I wish I could say I entered my corporate career with oodles of confidence, but I didn't. I've had some trauma in my background and in my family life. And I was always felt like being a leader was something I had to work really hard at. I had to fake it till you make it, right? So I would read books about confidence, and I would watch speakers talk about confidence. And I remember hiring a mindset coach and learning about confidence. And I would say all those things really helped me up to a certain point. It did enable me to walk into a room very powerfully. It did enable me to learn how to listen and speak eloquently and resolve conflict and all of the things that you have to do as a leader. However, there was always something missing, and it was almost like that inner sense of self-trust where I just knew that I could rise to the occasion. I didn't have to work so hard at it. I didn't have to prep for hours at a time every time I was about to present. I didn't have to go through the mental gymnastics of feeling like, why do they want me here? They're going to find out I don't know what I'm talking about. All the stuff that so many women, I'm sure, have shared with you and with me over the years. I just didn't feel an ease until I went through my own healing journey. And some of that was trauma-based work, but not all of it. A lot of it too was also just direct one-to-one coaching work with really smart human behavior experts that really helped me see the cognitive distortions that I was living my life under and the belief systems that had ruled my thinking that were quite honestly just simply not true. So once I started to unravel what I was choosing to say to myself about myself, that element of self-talk, and in combination with body-based practices to really get in touch with my physicality and my voice and my presence, I think that's when confidence, which I prefer to call self-trust, started to feel like it was a part of me, as opposed to something I took off the shelf and put on before coming into an interview or a meeting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I love the way that you explain that, how it took work over time. I think so many people think, oh, you're born with it or you're not, and these are sort of my character traits, and this is where I need to stay, this is how I am. But you decided to trust yourself to work on that behavior and then change your attitude to one of higher confidence so that you could do the work you wanted to do. You had this kind of end goal in mind, like, I feel I can impact in this way. And if I can, you know, grow, then that would be possible. And your training now is a lot of work in resilience, which I'm sure staying resilient in the work you were doing to get to where you are was incredibly important. What are kind of those key factors in resilience that individuals and also companies need to know about the people who work for them in order to be successful?
Yeah, great, great question. I think first and foremost, it's important to dispel the common beliefs about resilience, because I think that's where we potentially go wrong. So I grew up thinking resilience was like a mental toughness, that you just have to suck it up. You just have to do it. You just have to work really hard and get past the quote unquote hump that you may be facing. And certain elements of that are true. And in fact, I would consider myself to be a mega gritty person. I have that in spades. But the difference is that I see resilience now as a way to intelligently manage your energy so that you have the resources to rise to the occasion. You have the resources to be able to respond to a vexing email, or you have the resources to be able to deal with an irate client, if you will. So I think it's more about internal resourcing, and that includes self-regulation strategies, which may include breathing, which may include writing and journaling. It may be mindfulness-based. There's different ways in which one arrives to it, but it's really creating the inner capability to withstand periods of stress and change. And I think especially now, leaders need that more than ever. And I think also a key component to resilience that I look at is it's also about knowing how to prep and shift your attention. So when problems do come up, when conflict does come up, you have a way to prepare yourself to respond ahead of time. So it's more sustainable because it's a way of being versus something happening to you that you just have to get through. And the reason I like it and I'm so passionate about the topic is because I believe that's what makes for sustainable leadership. I believe that's the key ingredient for CEOs and executives to really perform at high levels is when they have built in that resourcing capability and they have this self-trust to know that whatever befalls them, they have the skills, the mindset, and the practices to fall back on to bring themselves back online if they feel themselves going offline and getting hijacked, if you will, emotionally.
Yeah, well, I think that our hustle culture can play into standing in the way of resilience when you're going a million miles an hour all the time and your answer is that you're busy or that you don't have time and you're experiencing this burnout that doesn't allow you, as you talked about, like the self-regulation, like you're too worn out to even deal with it when it comes. And then in order to make it through the tough time, you're utilizing resilience in more of the way of that, like mental toughness, like, oh, get through it. Right. And your strategy is more of this sustainable, prepared management of your energy. So how do we shift from scenario A of hustle culture to sustain and manage?
Yeah. I think first and foremost is to identify what the payoff is. Because I think that if someone had told me years ago that there was a payoff to why I hustled, I would have been like, what? Are you crazy? No, there's not. I don't like this pace. But the truth is there was a payoff. There was validation. There was a reputation of being the go-to girl. There was accolades. There was promotions. There was a tremendous payoff for hustling. And I think I had to dismantle this altar that I created for myself that this is how a woman achieves great things. She works her butt off and she just says yes and she does all these things, you know, she just keeps going. So I think once I realized that the cost was too great and that the cost outweighed the payoff, and the cost for me came in the form of my children looking at me and saying, mommy, you never pay attention. And mommy, your door is always closed. Or mom, you're always on the phone. And so until I really understood what the cost was in terms of my relationships and in terms of my physical, mental well-being, I didn't have the impetus to start looking at it differently. So that was the very first step that I would say to all the listeners as well is, identify what the payoff is versus the cost and ask yourself if it's worth it. And in my case, it got to a point where it was no longer worth it. And so once I did that, I was able to start to ask myself some of the deeper questions. Like, is this really what I want to be doing? Is this really the career or the tasks that are bringing out my aliveness or my unique zone of genius, as you put it? Because we can hide behind answering those questions with hustle, with just working and accumulating success after success, but not really answering the deeper questions that are underneath it. So I think that's the second part. And the last thing I'll mention, so I don't go on for too long, is that I once I understood also that there's a difference between hard work and hustle, that really helped me. I'm perfectly fine with going on a sprint. If I have a keynote coming up and I want to deliver a bang up job and give everyone a great experience, I will take the time that's needed to study the audience and study what I want to say and what stories are going to go best with that talk. But I'll intersperse moments of regularity. So time in nature or time to reflect, some really hard and fast start and end time. So I don't fall into a pattern of overwork, of which I can fall into quite easily. And so I know myself enough to know that I need to create boundaries. And so one of the ways in which I do that is I'll create large sprints, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with getting gritty and working really hard, but I need to also know that that's balanced with moments of rest. And often that rest is with my family or it's in nature. And those are two really critical components for me.
I resonated so much with what you said about identifying the payoff of hustle. And I was thinking back to my previous role where when people would ask me about my job, one of the first ways that I would describe it was in the quantity of hours that I worked. It was like, oh, you know, you think this is such a great like dream job. Well, let me tell you how hard I work to do this job. It's this many hours. I get here at this time. I come home at this time. And rather than like digging into the results that I was getting in the role, it was more about like pounding my chest, like, look how much I work. And when I decided to leave that role, it was really after very long conversations, like with my husband, where he was like, you need to wake up. Like, this is insane what you're doing. And as soon as I kind of awoke to like, whoa, you know, this is crazy. Like my life is passing me by when I'm dedicating it to my job and I cannot get off the cycle. Like we always say work smarter, not harder. We have these cute little like quips, but we don't have the tools to achieve those things. That I started to look at like, okay, well, you know, if I can reach this pinnacle in my career, I think I can do it in another way that makes more sense for the life that I want to live. And removing myself from that hustle culture, which I still work really hard in the same way that you do when it's a workup, when it's like, when it's a sprint, when it's a project, and then balancing that with celebration that it's completed and rest and pouring energy into the other things that I love in my life. It creates this much more, you know, the picture of the life I wanted to live. I remember like working in that hustle of 80 hour weeks and looking at people who had maybe, you know, they had a different title than me, but they worked so much less and they had all this extra time. And at first I was very like, well, you know, what if they worked harder? How farther along did they be in their career? But it was more because I was like so mad, I think, that all I was pouring in and I had no time for my kids and my family. So getting real honest and introspective and like dealing with those things you've got going on is absolutely step number one. And I love the way that you described it.
Yeah, well, thank you. And it's true. You know, I was laughing as you were sharing to myself because I remember every time I'd go to a family event and someone would ask me, Teresa, how are you doing? The first thing I would say, oh, I am just so busy. It was like verbatim. It was like the only way I responded to people. And I remember at one point, my husband was like, why do you always answer like that? And I was offended. I was like, well, because I'm just so busy. But it was a moment, you know, we all have these like moments of reckoning. And that was one for me where I thought, no, hold up here. You know, you were creating this busy part of it. And the second thing that it really allowed me to consider is that when you are hustling or going through a sprint on something that you feel really congruent and aligned with, it feels way different than when you are hustling at something that you are so far removed from or not interested in. That's a key thing, I think, too, that's really important to the conversation, is that what are you hustling for? Like, what is it that it gives you? And again, it's only in those moments of quiet or in conversation with a trusted friend or mentor or coach that you're able to actually ask yourself the question, yeah, hold on, what is important to me about this particular project or deliverable? Does it align? Does it fit with who I am and what I'm doing? And I think that was a moment when I asked myself, what is it that I'm so busy doing? And is it adding to my life or is it taking away from my life? And when I think back to my kids who were younger at the time, especially my executive career when I was flying everywhere. When I think back to the time that when I was an executive and I was flying around everywhere, that wasn't adding to my life. And so I really needed to ask the question, the important questions to assess my hustle. No.
Here, you're back.
Back, okay.
Okay, you said, is it adding to my life?
Yeah, so I had to ask the question, is what I'm doing adding to my life or is it taking away? Is it taking me further toward what I want more of in my career and in my family life and in my relationships, or is it taking me further away? And sometimes that one question alone, when my clients sit with that for anything longer than 5 minutes, there's huge insight that comes from that question and change can occur.
Well, there were a couple other questions that you ask that I thought were pretty big breakthrough moments around creating boundaries with your beliefs and the statement or the question of why does this grunt work always come to me? Mm-hmm. And where is this task best served?
Yeah. So
if you can't pull yourself out of this machine of hustle, at stepping back and asking like, why is that always you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's an important point because the truth is when you're in it, it's not as simple as saying, well, just leave, just quit. So I want to appreciate that for a lot of listeners, they might be in that place where they're like, but I can't just stop. I have kids to feed. There's all these different reasons. So then the next logical question becomes, okay, so let's then start inquiring what can change of all the things that you have going on that are being asked of you. What might be better served by delegating, outsourcing, suggesting that someone else take it on, or even having the boldness and the courage to be able to say, I'm at capacity and I really want to be able to help you, but I'm going to need, you know, a few more weeks before I'm able to do that for you in any great level of detail. And or like there's so many ways that we could reframe how we respond to people. So that's where boundaries really come in. And that's just learning how to communicate with those who are putting demands and requests on you in such a way that you're not turning them off by saying, I'm just so busy, I can't take anything else on, but saying, you know what, look, I really want to be able to help you out, but right now I'm working on this. And so I'll be able to get to that perhaps in a couple of weeks or whatever timeline is most appropriate. So giving women and men and leaders the voice and the language to be able to communicate back in a way that starts to maybe increase their bandwidth a little bit. A lot of it does start with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Those are really transformational words that you can't try just once. And then if you don't like the results, abandon. It's something that you have to ingrain and understand when your plate is full and what is the priority and giving people reasonable feedback, because let's face it, like if you're at capacity, there's only so much that you can contribute to an additional project. And in that situation, you have to be honest about your time and your capacity, and you're not going to do probably the A+ work that you would want to provide to this request if you don't have the time to do it in the first place. So really getting good at practicing the words that you had described. And, you know, it's something that you don't just do once. Like, it has to become part of who you are as a leader.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's a muscle, right? A lot of people are really afraid or uncomfortable with using boundary statements, and I don't blame them. And this is why I feel very strongly that I don't like cliches. I don't like, you know, statements that are so flip. Well, just let them know you're too busy. And that's not usually how it works. You really have to unravel what gets in the way of you communicating to others where in a way that you can assert a boundary. So that does require a little bit of unraveling first and playing with language that's more congruent to your personality. Mm-hmm. So I think having an intimate knowledge of what works best for your style and then practicing with small things, like just asserting boundaries in small areas, can make a big difference when you need to exercise it in a bigger area, such as a, you know, a boss or a CEO that you're working with. So I think it is important to acknowledge that it's not as trite as just being saying, hey, you just need to have boundaries. It's like, no, let's first understand your comfort level with communicating upwards and your comfort level with saying no. And where else in your life have you felt stifled by saying no? And what are some ways that we can work with that in a way that feels more comfortable for you and you can practice?
Mm-hmm. Do you need a keynote speaker for your next conference, ERG meeting, event, or group? I'm here, raising my hand. I help leaders grow their confidence so that they can lead more intentional, goal-directed, fulfilled, and happy lives. We are conditioned from our childhood to stay small. Don't be conceited. Run in the middle of the pack, because if we speak out too much or shine too brightly, we will offend other people. This could not be more wrong. When you are your best, most confident leader, you give others permission to shine too. So, how do we get there? How do we increase our confidence? I love sharing my best practices and proven methods to help leaders grow into who they are meant to be. Your most confident, authentic self, ready to take on your next biggest challenge in the office and in your personal life. Get in touch at emilyjansen.com. It's a new year, and I want to welcome a new sponsor to the Leadership is Female podcast, Staffy. That's S-T-A-F-I, and they can be found at getstaffy.com. We are all busy professionals, and we have a lot on our plate, and GetStaffy is here to help. They are a virtual assistant company. They're virtual assistants, legal assistants, receptionists, intake client specialists, sales representatives, and paralegals are thoroughly trained and effectively can manage multiple tasks, from answering customer inquiries to booking your family activities and managing your calendar and appointments. Plus, you get to save costs with our easy subscription-based service. That's getstaffy.com, or reach out to me at Emily Jansen on Instagram, and I will connect you directly to their people. They are a phenomenal company, and we've got an interview with their CEO on the podcast. If you need help, if your company needs help, if you need a virtual assistant that can help save costs and get more done, GetStaffy is the way to do it. GetStaffy.com and mention Leadership is Female, or let me know and I will put you in touch. Let's go. I don't know about you, but I love learning more about myself. If there's a quiz out there to help me better understand who I am, I'll take it. If there's a journal prompt, I'm using it. But how about a business that helps female leaders communicate effectively while inspiring confidence and trust in those you want to impact? Sign me up. Breakthrough Brands is unlocking clarity for women leading progress. They build leadership brands for women to discover what inspires them, define what drives them, and unlock how to share their brands with others. Do you want to gain clarity on your personal brand? Shoot me a note at leadershipisfemale@gmail.com or on Instagram, and we will introduce you to the women who will help you unlock your leadership brand. That's breakthroughbrands.com. Yeah. And the last thing I would add to that, I thought about a situation from my career is a lot of people would come to me as the leader with their ideas, and their ideas were about 1% formed, but but they would approach me and say, what do you think about this? Can we start working on this? And kind of want me to partner with them on this new idea that was in its infancy. And so as a leader, I would often, and discovered this pretty quickly after going down way too many dead end trails, is putting it back on the person with the idea to develop that plan a little bit more and then reapproach. And one of two things happens. One, it's not worth their time, so they abandon the idea, which, okay, that's a fine result, because that would have wasted who knows how much of that leader's time had I had accepted, you know, their initial proposal. Or two, they come back with something a lot more thought out, and then the way in which I can contribute is more well-defined, and then I can figure out how to help or fit it into my schedule. So yeah. that was a way that I started creating boundaries without just saying no or not right now or in 2 months, was putting it back for further development and then, you know, reapproaching at another time.
I love that. And I concur that also shifts the responsibility back to the other individual to have a more fulsome and well thought out process. The other thing too, I'll add, if it's helpful, is I often will coach my more senior executive clients to really get clear on identifying what they need. So for example, it might look like, you know, in order for this project to be successful, here are the three things I need from you. It's that clear, it's that succinct, it's that direct. And I like to only work with the number three. I don't want 5, 6, 7 bullet points, I want three. Because that forces the other to be much more succinct and very clear about what outcomes that they're looking for. And that enables me as a leader to know that what I'm gonna get in return are specific instructions as to how I can help them. And it forces them as a team member to be very clear and well thought out as to what they need from me. Again, it's all about reducing the cognitive load, you know, when we have just so much in our head. And that's where it's all about for me, especially as it relates to burnout, is how can we reduce the cognitive load, the amount of decisions we have to make, the amount of information we have to sift through. So let's work with the power of three. Tell me three things you specifically need from me, and I'll come back to you with my recommendations. That is a clean, crisp, and clear, I think, structure for working between leaders and teams.
When we talk about burnout, I think we also have to talk about self-care, which is a popular topic of conversation with a vast array of suggestions on what self-care might mean to each individual. But I want to ask you about your suggestions and your definitions of really how to identify and create self-care habits that work.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say, I don't necessarily look at self-care as a thing you do, or as a noun, right? Like, I think I read a book once, I won't remember the author, but there was a woman that really stood out to me. And if I can remember the name, I'll send it to you. But she really opened my eyes to what we get wrong about self-care culture. And we look at it as a thing that we do. So we go to the spa, we get a massage, we have a bath, we have drinks after work, we, you know, whatever it might be. It's a more of a, what I call a relaxation method, all of which have their place. You know, I love a good glass of wine now and then. I love going for a run. I love having a bubble bath. But I tend to look at self-care as a process of managing the mind. Like, how do you, on a sustainable day-to-day basis, manage what you're thinking, manage your mind, manage your reactions in a way that feels good to you? So to me, it's answering one question. And I put this at the top of every journal page I write in the morning. What do I need most today? And I'll just let my stream of consciousness share that out. And so sometimes that is, Teresa, you need a good hour of deep work to reflect on your strategy with this upcoming client. Or Teresa, what you really need today is a little bit of downtime and a trip to the gym. Or Teresa, what you need today is some working through some of your resentments that you're having lately and kind of like start to unearth what's underneath there. So I think it's getting really good at answering the question, what do I most need right now that will help me have a much more successful and productive day? And starting that first thing, not after the fact, I think is a really good, simple practice that people can put in place right away.
I love this. What do I need most today? Because you know what? Most of us start our days by checking our email, which is someone else's to-do list for us, especially when you're working within a large company. It's just this box to collect tasks, right? So what if you started your day by asking what you need most? And I love how your examples were not, I need a bubble bath or to get my nails done. It was like, I need deep work with this client because it woke me up at 2 a.m. last night because I was thinking about what deliverables I might owe them. So I need to make sure I carve out that time so I can get the work done today that only I can do, move it off my plate. And wow, that's really going to provide some relief with all of this like overload of thoughts going on in my head. So I really like that a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad. And I think you're bang on. It's, you know, whatever's taken up so much real estate, you know, in your mind is often related to what you need to care for. So that's, to me, that's like, you know, there's a slogan in 12-step groups called first things first. And that's what that is for me. It's like first things first. What do I need most right now in order to have a successful and productive day? And once I answer that question, it's like a practice of real self-care in putting my needs first, which when I do, and I can cross that particular thing off my list, if you want to use those terms, I'm able to be much more present with those around me. And it's when I forget to do that, that sometimes my day will just have a life of its own. And then I know something will happen. It'll be just that one thing that causes me to, you know, to go around the bend. So yeah, I think it's just a really simple practice that doesn't need to get convoluted with all this, you know, self-care, candle, bubble bath, rhetoric that's out there, which again are all wonderful, but that's not the true intent, I believe, of the term.
Yeah. Well, and I can think of just an infinite number of examples of that real estate in my brain, that one project, that one scenario, that one email just nagging me constantly. So I can't be fully present on Saturday at my kid's soccer game or something, you know, like it just, and if you took maybe the 10 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever it was to get that thing done, or prioritize when you're asking yourself, what do I need to get done today? Do those things first. Yeah. And then you can live such a better, more intentional day. I did that a couple of times over the weekend, taking care of the things that I needed to do first and foremost. And then the rest of the day was what it was meant to be with my family. What a great practice. And I've been talking about on the podcast so much about journaling, gratitude, all the research that's behind it. And I just need to acknowledge to everybody that Teresa is up here today, you know, like supporting that thought just another time and also in a new way to help you set up for your most productive day by asking that question, starting with maybe that journal prompt or that piece of paper. What do I need most today?
Yeah, just keep it simple. You know, I think we're in such a information overload all the time anyway, now more than ever. So the more we can reduce the complexity of what we have to decide and what we have to do and just keep things simple, the more we'll stick with it. So that's why I love that one simple practice. And I'm a huge journaler and I've done it on and off for years. But when I do, the clarity I get is immense. And especially when I can stay very clear on just one or two questions, it has a profound impact on my day.
So when you are not helping executive professionals to eradicate burnout, when you're not keynote speaking, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, two things always come at the top of my list. I love, love, love to read, and I love, love, love to hike. I love being in the outdoors. I love to run. I love to hike. I love nature. I love trees. I just really like to soak up quiet and wisdom of the earth, if you will. So that's something I like to spend a lot of my time doing on the weekend when I can. And the second thing is I love to read. And I think it's super important that I mention that those of us who are in this profession of whether it's personal and professional growth or coaching or speaking or facilitating or training, we can live and breathe this kind of personal growth work in books and nonfiction. So I make it a point to read at least 30 minutes of fiction every day to give my brain a break from all of the, I don't want to call it self-help, but in that vein type of work, so that I can, you know, just exercise a different part of my brain that's not solely focused on the betterment of me. Sometimes I just want to read a book that has nothing to do with me, but is really just about a beautiful story and get inspired that way. So those would be the two things that I really love to do.
Yeah, I make it a habit to read before bed every night, and it's a fiction book. Yeah. On my Kindle. All the business books are for and for time during the day, but how do you carve out the time to read? How does that work into your schedule? For those of us who always have it on our to-do list to finish another book, where do you fit that time in?
Yeah. I don't want to be cringeworthy and talk about the 5 a.m. routine, because I think so many people just want to like kill me when I talk about it. But I'm just going to mention it anyway, that I am a morning person. And so I do spend at least probably not 30 minutes, but probably 20 minutes of reading in the morning. And that's usually when I read more of the nonfiction, just to kind of prime my mind for the day. But, you know, there's other ways, too. I read it on the train sometimes. I read it when I'm sitting for a doctor's appointment for my kid. I'll just take 5 or 10 minutes. The time that I could be I'm scrolling is a good time to remember I could be reading. And so that's usually my test, is like I've been scrolling through Instagram for 20 minutes. I probably could have read one chapter of a really inspirational book in this time. So I try to remember that when I'm not waking up in the morning and carving out that time.
Okay, we are so aligned there, because that has been one of my things recently, is replacing whatever I'm consuming on my phone, which is like, unless I'm calling or texting.
Yeah.
Or like getting directions somewhere, right? Or you're like using your phone in the car as a tool. Like, put my phone down and pick up the book instead. I even went so far, this sounds funny, but it's true, I changed to carrying a larger purse so I can have my book in the bag. So I'm not pulling out my phone and looking at Instagram, or I have a horrible habit of on the iPhone swiping to look at the news curation, which is literally what I should buy on Amazon and like pop culture news. It's insane. This is like total time suck. I don't need any more Amazon packages or to know what celebrities are doing. So imagine if I substituted that time during the day with something that could actually help, because I do have that intention to read more. I want and love to consume books. So having like a habit switch there is something I'm really working on this year.
Yeah, well, you're not alone. I mean, and I try to apply a bit of humor and grace and compassion. I mean, I like Hello Magazine just as much as the next person sometimes. And I allow myself to have that little guilty luxury, I'll call it. But it's just a matter of degrees, right? If I'm over-indexing on kind of escapism, what happens is I start to feel it. I start to feel the effects of it. And that's a signal for me to, you know, come back online and do something different. And so I listen to my body when it tells me, oof, this doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's sadly wrap it up, because I've so enjoyed talking to you, but let's do the final four questions. Yeah. What's your best piece of advice for women today so they can level up? tomorrow or maybe later this afternoon?
Yeah, I would say what's really speaking to my heart right now is what I call like full body leadership, right? And that leadership is not just a head-based job, right? Leadership is whole body, meaning that when you are answering, responding, and leading from a place of being fully online, when you're centered in your core, when you're grounded in your feet, when your shoulders and your neck are free of tension, what ends up happening is you just speak and lead from a place of calm and composure and grace. So I think to really step up leadership for females today is really start investigating the role of your body in leadership and in how you show up and in how you give voice. I think that will reveal very surprising insights that you may not otherwise have considered.
Where are you traveling to next?
We just booked a trip to Mexico in late February. For those of you that are listening, I'm in Canada, so the weather is not balmy. And so every February we head down south. So we're going to go to Mexico and spend 10 days in just outside of the Mayan Riviera to check out the pyramids and do some hiking and do some fun stuff. Yeah.
What is your pump up song, either before you're taking the stage for a keynote or you're boarding the plane to Mexico? Two different scenarios. What are you listening to?
Well, I'll tell you, I will listen to anything by 50 Cent. I know he sings a lot. He's like, but nothing gets me off the floor and like really in the mood than listening to 50 Cent. I just rock out and I feel on fire. And I do it every time.
And then finally, what is your favorite quote?
Well, this one was hard because there's so many, but I think for the purposes of this interview, I'll say probably Melinda Gates. She was known for saying, "A woman with a voice is a strong woman." And I love that, again, because in the simplicity of the message, it's about voice. And so that doesn't mean you need to be a keynote speaker like myself or Emily, but it just means having the ability to voice what you need at the time that you need it in a way that feels congruent and aligned with who you are. That is a powerful, transformative force for women today.
Beautifully stated, and what a way to wrap up this amazing conversation. It's so wonderful to get to know you, get to meet you. Where can our audience follow along your career and learn more from you and your work?
Well, thank you, Emily. It was so much fun meeting you too and having this conversation. I had such a good time. Really simple. If people want to learn more about me, I hang out on LinkedIn. A lot of my thought leadership is through LinkedIn. And my website, so teresavoza.ca or .com. I have both domains just in case. Mm-hmm. And on my website too, there's a few different resources that might be helpful to clients. There's a resource on boundaries. There's a resource on what you need to stop doing that might be helpful for clients as they navigate this very busy, busy world.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for leading us forward on Leadership is Female.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us today. Time is your most precious resource, and it means the world that you spent it with us. Please help us reach more people who need to hear these interviews by hitting the subscribe button and the 5-star rating on your iPhone. Do you know someone who could benefit from this interview? Please share it. Take a screenshot and post to your Instagram stories, copy the link and share on LinkedIn, or text that link to your colleague. The Leadership is Female podcast exists to showcase female leadership in sports and entertainment and give you the tips to level up. We will extend a hand back to lead you forward. Extend the same hand by sharing this with someone who needs to hear it. One last thing. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Leadership is Female. Now, take this lesson and run. Let's go.